Chapter 3. The Constitution. Why it matters. The Constitution outlines the ideals of American government and describes how they should be achieved. It tells you what your rights and privileges are. The Constitution affects you, your family, and your friends as much today as it affected those who wrote it more than 200 years ago. Big Ideas. Section 1. The Nation's First Governments. Political principles and major events shape how people form governments. Americans face the task of forming independent governments at both the state and national levels. Section 2. The Road to the Constitution. Political principles and major events shape how people form governments. American leaders decided that a new constitution was needed. Section 3. The Structure of Our Constitution. A constitution reflects the values and goals of the society that creates it. The Constitution is this nation's fundamental law. Section 4. Principles Underlying the Constitution. A constitution reflects the values and goals of the society that creates it. The Constitution sets forth the basic principles of government. Section 1. The Nation's First Governments. Real-World Civics. It has a crack, and it no longer rings. The Liberty Bell, on display in Philadelphia today, brings to the minds of every American student what independence and freedom mean. Tradition tells us that the Liberty Bell last rang in July 1776 to announce the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. This was a time when there was no television, radio, or internet. It announced to the people that John Hancock and Benjamin Franklin, William Ellery, Josiah Bartlett, and the other 52 people had signed the Declaration. The First State Constitutions. Main Idea. Americans face the task of forming independent governments at both the state and national levels. Civics and you. Would you be surprised to learn that the Constitution of the United States was not our first plan of government? Read to find out about the nation's first constitution. Even before the Declaration of Independence was signed, American colonists discussed the possibility of independence, and American leaders began preparing new state constitutions to replace the old colonial charters. In May of 1776, the Second Continental Congress urged colonists to form state governments as shall best contribute to the happiness and safety of their constituents, voters. Continental Congress. In January 1776, New Hampshire became the first colony to organize as a state and craft a detailed written plan for government or constitution. Within a few years, every former colony had a new constitution or had converted or changed its colonial charters into a state constitution. From colonies to states. The states set up similar systems of government. Each state had a legislature to create laws. Most of these legislators were bicameral, like the English Parliament. That is, they were divided into two parts or houses. The members of each house or state legislature were chosen by different methods. Each state also had a governor, who was elected either by the legislature or by the citizens. The governor's job was to carry out the laws. Finally, each state had judges and courts to decide what the laws meant and how they applied to each new situation. Preserving rights. Many of the new state governments were based upon ideals expressed in the Declaration of Independence. American ideals of individual rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are in the Declaration. Most state constitutions included a Bill of Rights, guaranteeing certain basic freedoms and legal protections to the state citizens. Some of these rights, such as trial by jury and protection of personal property, can be traced back to the Magna Carta and the English Bill of Rights. Reading check. Describing. What documents did the new state constitutions replace? The Articles of Confederation. Main idea. The weaknesses of the Articles of Confederation created problems for the new country. Civics and you. You make a plan, but the plan is not working. What do you do? Find out what action American leaders took when their plan of government was not working. Although each state was well prepared to govern itself when independence was declared, a state could not do some things on its own. It could not raise and maintain a large army, for example, and Americans realized that 13 small separate forces would be no match for the mighty British Army. Americans concluded that if they wanted to win the war with Great Britain, they needed a single strong army under central control. For this and other reasons, the Second Continental Congress made plans for a union of the states. In 1777, the Congress detailed these plans in a document called the Articles of Confederation, the first Constitution of the United States of America. Forming a Confederation. A confederation is a group of individual state governments that band together for a common purpose. The Articles of Confederation established a system for cooperation, or a league of friendship, among independent states. By 1781, all 13 states had ratified or approved the Articles of Confederation. The Articles set up a one-house legislature in which each state had one vote. This Confederation Congress, as it came to be called, was the only government body with control over the army and authority to deal with foreign countries on behalf of the states. These central powers were quite limited, though. As a result of the colonial experience under the British government, the 13 states refused to give the Confederation Congress two important powers. It had no power to enforce its laws and no power to tax. The Articles allowed the Congress to ask the states for money but not to demand it. The Congress could not, in fact, require the states to do anything. Accomplishments. The Confederation Congress laid the foundations for the administration of the national government. It also provided for the systematic growth and development of the United States. Ordinance of 1785. When the American Revolution began, only a few thousand white settlers lived west of the Appalachian Mountains. By the 1790s, their numbers had increased to about 120,000. Through the Ordinance of 1785, Congress created a system for surveying, taking a detailed measurement of an area of land, and selling the western lands. It arranged the land into townships 6 miles square. Each township was divided into 36 sections of each 1 square mile. The Ordinance of 1785 at first applied only to what was then called the Northwest Territory, present-day Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin. It established a system of land surveying and settlement that we still use today. Northwest Ordinance. Once the policy for settlement of western lands was established, Congress turned to the problem of governing this area or region. In 1787, the Northwest Ordinance, perhaps the most significant achievement of Congress under the Articles, was passed. It laid the basis for the organization of new territorial governments and set a precedent for the method of admitting new states to the Union. The Northwest Ordinance also included a specific provision outlawing slavery. There shall be neither slavery nor involuntary servitude in said territory, the Northwest Ordinance. This provision would have an important impact or effect on the history of America in the 1800s. The Confederation's Western Ordinances had an enormous effect on American expansion and development. The Ordinance of 1785 and the Northwest Ordinance opened the way for settlement of the Northwest Territory in a stable and orderly manner. Weaknesses of the Articles. It soon became clear that the Articles had some serious problems. To begin with, the Congress could not pass a law unless 9 states voted in favor of it. Any attempt to amend or change the Articles required a unanimous vote of all 13 states. These strict voting requirements made it difficult for the Congress to accomplish anything. Even when the Congress managed to pass laws, it could not enforce them. Unlike the state constitutions, the Articles did not provide for a governor or for courts. If a state decided to ignore a law, the Congress could do nothing about it. A time of crisis. The United States was able to overcome the weaknesses of the Articles. The states secured their independence by winning the Revolutionary War against Great Britain. A peace agreement called the Treaty of Paris was signed in 1783. Debt. Independence, however, did not put an end to the struggles of the United States. For one thing, the country faced serious financial troubles. Unable to collect taxes, the Congress had borrowed money to pay for the Revolutionary War. It had run up a debt that would take years to repay. The state governments had also fallen into deep debt. They taxed their citizens heavily as a result, driving many farmers out of business and sparking widespread resentment. The states also taxed goods imported from other states and foreign countries, hurting trade. The Confederation Congress had no power to remedy these problems. Shays' Rebellion. Even worse, the Congress could do nothing about the public's insecurity. Americans feared that the government could not protect their safety. During 1786 and 1787, riots broke out in several states. Daniel Shays, a farmer who had fallen into debt because of heavy state taxes, led one of the most alarming disturbances. When Massachusetts courts threatened to take his farm as payment for his debts, Shays felt the state had no right to punish him for a problem it had created. Many others agreed. Shays armed about 1,200 farmers in an attack on a federal arsenal. Although the rebellion, known as Shays' Rebellion, was quickly stopped, it sent a wake-up call throughout the country. Many political leaders, merchants, and others began arguing for a stronger national government. As George Washington wrote, "I do not conceive we can exist long as a nation without having lodged somewhere a power which will pervade the whole Union." George Washington's Papers. In 1787, only 12 of the states sent delegates to a meeting in Philadelphia to revise the Articles of Confederation. Reading check, explaining, what financial troubles did the young nation face? Section 2, The Road to the Constitution. Real-World Civics. When the U.S. Constitution was ratified in 1787, there were no parades, no wild celebration, and certainly no bulletproof glass to shield the president. But in 1987, then-President Ronald Reagan had to be protected from harm when he led the celebration for the 200th birthday of the Constitution. He asked Americans to think back to the time when the document was drafted. The colonies were surrounded by unfriendly powers. Some colonies had unbearably high taxes, others had crushing debts, and still others were involved in trade disagreements. The Philadelphia Convention. Main idea. American leaders decided to create a new plan of government. Civics and you. Why is it important for a nation to establish a set of laws? Read to find out the issues American leaders faced in organizing a new plan of government. 10 years of living under the Articles of Confederation had shown Americans that the loose association of 13 independent states was not working. By early 1787, it was clear that the national government had to be strengthened. Each state was asked to send delegates to a convention in Philadelphia to fix the flaws. This meeting was to become the Constitutional Convention. Only Rhode Island chose not to take part because its leaders opposed a stronger central government. The work begins. The convention began in Philadelphia's Independence Hall on May 25, 1787. Rain fell heavily during the opening week, leaving the roads to the city choked with mud. Many delegates had to travel long distances and arrived late. Once all were assembled, however, they were an extraordinary group. The delegates. Most of the 55 men present were well-educated lawyers, merchants, college presidents, physicians, generals, governors, and planters with considerable political experience. 8 of the delegates had signed the Declaration of Independence. 7 had been governors of their states, and 41 were or had been members of the Continental Congress. Native Americans, African Americans, and women were not considered part of the political process or movement, so none attended. Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania, 81, was the oldest delegate. He was famous as a diplomat, writer, inventor, and scientist. Most delegates, however, were still young men in their 30s or 40s with great careers ahead of them. 2 delegates, George Washington and James Madison, would go on to become presidents of the United States. 19 would become U.S. senators, and 13 served in the House of Representatives. 4 men would become federal judges, and 4 others would become Supreme Court justices. A few notable leaders were not at the convention. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were both in Europe as representatives of the American government, Jefferson in Paris and Adams in London. Patrick Henry, a prominent Virginian leader during the American Revolution, was also missing. Although elected as a delegate, Henry was against the convention and did not attend. Key decisions. The delegates unanimously chose George Washington to preside over the convention. Widely respected for his leadership during the American Revolution, Washington would now call on speakers and make sure that the meetings ran in an orderly, efficient manner. At the start, he reminded the delegates of the importance of their task. He warned that if they could not come up with an acceptable plan of government, perhaps another dreadful conflict is to be sustained. Operating procedures. At the very start of the convention, the delegates made several important decisions. They agreed that each state would have one vote, no matter how many delegates represented that state. They also agreed that a simple majority, in this case 7 votes, would decide any issue. The delegates decided to keep the work of the convention secret. This was a key decision because it made it possible for the delegates to talk freely. The public was not allowed to attend meetings. The doors were guarded, and the windows were kept tightly shut, despite or in spite of the summer heat. Each delegate promised not to tell outsiders what was going on inside. Because of this secrecy, we have virtually no written records of the convention. The only details we have came from a notebook kept by James Madison, a delegate from Virginia. Need for a new constitution. The Congress gave delegates the job of revising the Articles of Confederation. The call to revise the Articles of Confederation came while the young nation faced difficult problems. Many Americans believed that the Confederation government was too weak to deal with these challenges. Many national leaders had become dissatisfied with the weaknesses of the Confederation. They quickly agreed that changing the Articles was not enough. They decided instead to dispose of the Articles and write a new constitution. All the delegates set out to strengthen the national government by creating a new plan of government. Thus, the meeting in Philadelphia came to be known as the Constitutional Convention. Reading check. Explaining. Why did the delegates decide to keep the work of the Constitutional Convention a secret? Creating the Constitution. Main idea. Many of the provisions of the Constitution were arrived at through a series of compromises. Civics and you. Have you and a rival ever set aside your differences to work for a common cause? This happened when the delegates resolved their differences to create the Constitution. The delegates to the Constitutional Convention were determined to create a framework of government that all states could accept. Everyone knew that failure could mean disaster. According to James Madison's notes of the convention, George Mason of Virginia said the following, "I would bury my bones in the city rather than leave the convention without anything being done." George Mason, remarks at the Constitutional Convention. On May 29, 1787, shortly after the convention began, the Virginia delegates proposed a plan for the new government. James Madison had designed what became known as the Virginia Plan. The Virginia Plan. The Virginia Plan described a federal government very similar to the one we have today. It included a president, courts, and a Congress with two houses. Representation in each House of Congress would be based on each state's population. Large states would have more votes than smaller states. The Virginia Plan appealed to delegates from the more heavily populated states, such as Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and New York, as well as Virginia. The small states, however, feared that a government dominated by the large states would ignore their interests. The New Jersey Plan. After 2 weeks of heated discussion, delegates from the smaller states submitted their own plan. On June 15th, William Patterson presented an alternative plan. The New Jersey Plan called for a government similar to the one under the Articles of Confederation. It included a one-house Congress in which states would have equal representation and therefore equal votes. Under this plan, Congress could set taxes and regulate trade, powers it did not have under the Articles. Delegates from Delaware, New Jersey, and Maryland approved of this plan. It made their states equal in power to the big states. Of course, the large states would not accept this plan. They thought larger states should have more power than smaller states. The Great Compromise. For 6 weeks, the delegates debated the merits of the two plans. A committee headed by Roger Sherman of Connecticut finally came up with an answer. The committee proposed that Congress have two houses, a Senate and a House of Representatives, that would be structured differently from each other. Each state would have equal representation in the Senate, which would please the smaller states. In the House, representation would be based on population, which would please the larger states. No group was completely happy, but this was a solution with which all could live. Historians call Sherman's plan the Connecticut Compromise or the Great Compromise. A compromise is a way of resolving disagreements in which each side gives up something but gains something else. The Three-Fifths Compromise. Although the Great Compromise settled the structure of Congress, other questions remained. At the time of the Constitutional Convention, more than 550,000 African Americans, mostly in the South, were enslaved. The Southern states wanted to count these people as part of their population to increase their voting power in the House of Representatives. The Northern states, which had few enslaved persons, opposed the idea. They argued that because enslaved persons were not allowed to vote or otherwise participate in government, they should not be used to give Southern states a stronger voice in Congress. In the Three-Fifths Compromise, delegates agreed that every 5 enslaved persons would count as 3 free persons. Thus, 3/5 of the slave population in each state would be used in determining representation in Congress. Other compromises. Northern and Southern delegates to the convention compromised on trade matters, too. The Northern states felt that Congress should be able to regulate both foreign trade and trade between the states. The southern states, however, feared that Congress would use this power to tax exports, goods sold to other countries. If this happened, the southern economy would suffer because it depended heavily on exports of tobacco, rice, and other products. Southerners also feared that Congress might stop slave traders from bringing enslaved people into the United States. Thus, southern delegates objected because southern plantations depended on the labor of slaves. Again, a compromise among the delegates would settle the issue. After some discussion, the southern states agreed that Congress could regulate trade between the states as well as with other countries. In exchange, the North agreed that Congress could not tax exports, nor could it interfere with the slave trade before 1808. The delegates also compromised on issues concerning their new government. Some delegates thought members of Congress should choose the president. Others believed that the people should vote to decide the presidency. The solution was the Electoral College, a group of people who would be named by each state legislature to select the president and vice president. The Electoral College system is still used today, but the voters in each state, not the legislatures, now choose electors. Balancing viewpoints. Main idea. Writing the new Constitution and getting the American people to approve it was not an easy task. Civics and you. Did you ever work on a committee in which many people had to decide on one solution to a problem? That is a similar situation to what faced the writers of the new U.S. Constitution. Throughout the summer, the delegates to the Constitutional Convention hammered out the details of the new government. As their work drew to an end, some delegates headed home, but 42 remained out of the original 55. On September 17, 1787, they gathered for the last time. A committee headed by Governor Morris had put its ideas in writing, and the Constitution was ready to be signed. All but three delegates signed their names at the bottom. The delegates at Philadelphia had produced the Constitution, but its acceptance depended upon the will of the American people. The next step was to win ratification, or approval of the Constitution. The delegates had decided that each state would set up a ratifying convention to vote yes or no. When at least 9 of the 13 states had ratified it, the Constitution would become the supreme law of the land. Who were the Federalists? Americans reacted to the proposed Constitution in different ways. Supporters of the document called themselves Federalists. They chose this name to emphasize that the Constitution would create a system of federalism, a form of government in which power is divided between the federal or national government and the states. To win support, the Federalists reminded Americans of the flaws in the Articles of Confederation. They argued that the United States would not survive without a strong national government. Supporters of the Federalists included large landowners who wanted the property protection a strong national government could provide. The Federalists claimed that only a strong national government could protect the new nation from enemies abroad and solve the country's internal problems. The Federalist Papers. In a series of essays known as The Federalist, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay defended the Constitution. Madison argued in The Federalist No. 10, "A republic, by which I mean a government in which the scheme of representation takes place, promises the cure for which we are seeking." James Madison, The Federalist, No. 10. Who were the Anti-Federalists? Those who opposed the Constitution were called Anti-Federalists. Their main argument was that the new Constitution would take away the liberties Americans had fought to win from Great Britain. They believed the new Constitution would create a strong national government, ignore the will of the states and the people, and favor the wealthy few over the common people. Perhaps the strongest criticism of the Constitution was that it lacked a Bill of Rights to protect individual freedoms. Many feared they would lose the liberties gained during the Revolution. Several state conventions took a stand and announced they would not ratify the Constitution without the addition of a Bill of Rights. Launching a new nation. The Federalists eventually agreed with the Anti-Federalists that a Bill of Rights was necessary. They promised that if the Constitution was adopted, the new government would add a Bill of Rights to it. That promise helped turn the tide. Several states had already voted for ratification. On June 21, 1788, New Hampshire became the 9th state to do so, and the Constitution took effect. In time, the 4 remaining states ratified the Constitution, the last being Rhode Island in 1790. The 13 independent states were now one nation, the United States of America. Reading check, explaining. Why did Anti-Federalists oppose the Constitution? Section 3. The Structure of Our Constitution. Real-World Civics. What does the word government mean to you? The military? Many, many documents? Laws and rules? Lynn Cheney, wife of Vice President Dick Cheney, supports the idea that school children need to know the government is made up of living, breathing people who represent their right to freedom. Mrs. Cheney, hosting a Constitution Day party for dozens of Washington, D.C. second graders, stressed the importance of knowing history and that one of the important history lessons we can learn is that freedom isn't inevitable. The sections of the Constitution. Main idea. The Constitution is a remarkable document that serves as an adaptable blueprint for governing the United States. Civics and you. Have you ever read some instructions that did not make sense? Did you wish they were better organized so you could follow them? Read how the Constitution was organized. Although the main purpose of the Constitution is to provide a framework for government, it does much more than that. It is the highest authority in the nation. It is the basic law of the United States. The powers of the branches of government come from it. Like the American flag, the Constitution is a symbol of our nation. It represents our system of government and our basic ideals, such as liberty and freedom. The Constitution has three main parts. First is the preamble, an introduction that states the goals and purposes of the government. Next are seven articles that describe the structure of the government. Third are 27 amendments or additions and changes to the Constitution. The preamble. The preamble consists or is expressed by a single concise sentence that begins and ends as follows. We, the people of the United States, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Preamble of the U.S. Constitution. These carefully chosen words make clear that the power of government comes from the people. The government depends on the people for its power and exists to serve them. The middle part of the preamble states six purposes of the government. 1. To form a more perfect union. To unite the states so they can operate as a single nation for the good of all. 2. To establish justice, to make certain that all citizens are treated equally. 3. To ensure domestic tranquility, to maintain peace and order, keeping citizens and their property safe from harm. 4. To provide for the common defense, to be ready militarily to protect the country and its citizens from attack. 5. To promote the general welfare, to help people live healthy, happy, and prosperous lives. 6. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to guarantee the basic rights of all Americans, including future generations, posterity. The Articles. The seven articles that follow the preamble are identified by the Roman numerals 1 through 7. The first three articles describe the powers and responsibilities of each branch of government. Article 1. Article 1 outlines the lawmaking powers of the legislative branch, or Congress. The article states that Congress, made up of two houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives, will have all lawmaking authority. The article then describes how members of each house will be chosen and what rules they must follow in making laws. You will learn more about Congress in Chapter 6. Article 2. Article 2 provides for an executive branch, or law-enforcing branch of government, headed by a president and vice president. Article 2 explains how these leaders are to be elected and how they can be removed from office. Article 2 goes on to list the president's powers, including the power to command the armed forces and to make treaties with other nations. You will learn more about the executive branch in Chapter 7. Article 3. The judicial branch is the part of government that interprets the laws and sees that they are fairly applied. Article 3 calls for one Supreme Court and such lower courts as Congress deems appropriate. Article 3 then lists the powers of the federal courts and describes the kinds of cases they may hear. You'll read about our federal judiciary in Chapter 8. Articles 4 through 7. Article 4 of the Constitution explains the relationship between the states and the national government. Article 5 specifies under what conditions the Constitution can be changed. Article 6 contains a key statement declaring the Constitution the supreme law of the land. In Article 7, the framers dealt with practical matters. The Constitution would take effect, they wrote, when 9 states ratified it. Reading check, describing. What is the main purpose of Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution? Amending the Constitution. Main idea. The framers wrote the Constitution so that it could be adapted to meet changing needs. Civics and you. How do you think the Constitution and our government have changed over time? Read to find out how the framers planned for change. Any change in the Constitution is called an amendment. Would it surprise you to know that thousands of amendments to the Constitution have been considered over the years? Only 27 have become law because the framers deliberately made the amendment process difficult. After months of debate and compromise, they knew how delicately balanced the Constitution was. Changing even one small detail could have dramatic effects throughout the government. Therefore, the framers made sure the Constitution could not be altered without the overwhelming support of the people. At the same time, the ability to amend the Constitution is necessary. Constitutional amendments safeguard many of our freedoms. For example, the abolition of slavery and the right of women to vote were added as amendments. If the Constitution could not have been amended to protect the rights of African Americans, women, and other oppressed groups, it and our government might not have survived. Amendment process. The process for amending the Constitution, as outlined in Article 5, involves two steps, proposal and ratification. An amendment may be proposed in either of two ways. The first method, used for all amendments so far, is by congressional action. A vote of two-thirds of the members of both houses of Congress is required. The second method is by a national convention requested by two-thirds of the state legislatures. Ratifying an amendment. Once a national amendment has been proposed, three-fourths of the states must ratify it. The states have two ways to do this, by a vote of either the state legislature or by a special state convention. Only one amendment, the 21st Amendment, has been ratified by means of state conventions. Interpreting the Constitution. The writers of the Constitution knew that the world would change in many ways they could not predict. For this reason, they attempted to keep the document as general as possible. Although they went into great detail about some matters, they left other matters open to interpretation. The Necessary and Proper Clause. Article 1 lists the powers of Congress. In this article, the Constitution gives Congress the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper to carry out its duties. The Necessary and Proper Clause allows Congress to exercise powers not specifically listed in the Constitution. These powers are known as implied powers. Much of what the federal government does today, from licensing television stations to regulating air pollution, is based on the implied powers of Congress. Of course, not everyone agrees which laws are necessary and proper, and which laws are not. Some people feel Congress should be allowed to make any laws the Constitution does not specifically forbid. These people believe in a loose interpretation of the Constitution. Others believe in a strict interpretation. They feel Congress should make only the kinds of laws mentioned by the Constitution. Court decisions. The final authority for interpreting the Constitution rests with the Supreme Court. Over the years, the Supreme Court has interpreted the Constitution in different ways, sometimes strictly, sometimes loosely. With each new interpretation, our government changes. Legislative and presidential actions. The actions of Congress and the executive branch have also caused new interpretations of the Constitution. The Constitution allows the House of Representatives to impeach or accuse federal officials, while the Senate determines the person's guilt or innocence. How have actions by the President informally amended the Constitution? In 1841, William Henry Harrison became the first President to die in office. Vice President John Tyler assumed or accepted the powers of the President according to the provisions in the Constitution. The Constitution, however, was unclear on whether Tyler automatically became president or whether he was merely acting as president until the next election. Tyler went ahead and took the presidential oath. Not until 1967, when the 25th Amendment was ratified, was Tyler's action officially part of the Constitution. There are other examples as well. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state that the president should propose bills or budgets to Congress. Yet since the presidency of Woodrow Wilson, 1913 to 1921, each year the president proposes hundreds of bills to Congress. Presidents interpret the Constitution in other ways, too. Not only does the president make agreements with other countries without congressional approval, the president also requests legislation from Congress. The Constitution does not direct the president to take these actions. Interpretation through custom. The interpretation of the Constitution has also changed through customs that have developed. For example, although the Constitution does not mention political parties, they are an important part of today's political system. These days, parties help organize the government and conduct elections. The Constitution in the present day is quite different from the document written in 1787. In the next 200 years, it will probably go through many more changes. However, the basic structure and principles of our government, a delicate balance among three branches, will no doubt remain. Reading check. Inferring. Why are amendments to the Constitution necessary? Section 4. Principles underlying the Constitution. Real-world civics. When young people leave home to go to college, where do they vote? At home or in the city where they go to school for 9 months of the year? Young Hahn, a student at Hamilton College in Utica, New York, believed that state and federal law should grant him the right to vote in the town where he lived while going to school. The county election board in Utica did not agree, claiming that students living in dorms were not permanent residents. Hahn organized the National Student Voting Rights Campaign to fight for college students who wanted to vote at the location of their colleges. Major principles of government. Main idea. The Constitution sets forth the basic principles of government. Civics and you. What principles do you live by? Read to discover how the basic principles of the Constitution have remained the same for more than 200 years. While the Constitution may seem filled with many details about how our nation should be governed, these details fall under five fundamental principles of government: popular sovereignty, the rule of law, separation of powers, checks and balances, and federalism. These principles are the foundation on which our government is built. Article 4 of the Constitution guarantees the American people a republican form of government. Today, the word republic can mean any representative government headed by an elected president or similar leader, rather than a leader who inherits the position. To the framers of the Constitution, though, a republic was a representative democracy. In a representative democracy, the power belongs to the people, who express their will through elected representatives. This idea was important to the early English colonists who came to America. Popular sovereignty. The idea that the power of government lies with the people is called popular sovereignty. Sovereignty means the right to rule. Popular, in this case, means the population or public. The Declaration of Independence is really a statement about popular sovereignty. It says that government should draw their powers from the consent of the governed. The same idea is echoed in the "We the People" phrase in which the Constitution begins. Further, the Constitution includes several provisions that protect and ensure or guarantee the sovereignty of the people. Under the Constitution, the will of the people is expressed most strongly through elections. By a majority vote, citizens decide who will represent them in Congress. Through the Electoral College, they also choose the President and Vice President. Elected officials are always accountable to the people. Elections are regularly scheduled, and voters can reject and replace representatives who serve them poorly. Rule of law. The framers firmly believed that the government should be strong, but not too strong. They therefore included in the Constitution the principle of limited government, which means that government can do only what the people allow it to do. As James Madison put it, "In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this: you must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place oblige it to control itself." James Madison, The Federalist, number 51. To limit the power of both the federal government and the states, the Constitution specifies what they may and may not do. English monarchs prior to the Magna Carta had unlimited government. There were few restrictions on what they did. Under the Constitution, the government is also limited by the rule of law. This means that the law applies to everyone, even those who govern. No one may break the law or escape its reach. Separation of powers. To protect against abuse of power and the possibility of one person or group gaining too much power, the framers divided the federal government into three branches, each with different functions. The framers were influenced by the ideas of French philosopher Baron de Montesquieu. Montesquieu believed that the best way to safeguard the liberty of the people was to clearly separate the legislative, executive, and judicial functions of government and assign or appoint each to a separate branch of government. This division of authority is called separation of powers. Checks and balances. Even with the separation of powers, the framers feared that one branch of government could dominate the other two. In order to prevent any one of the three branches from becoming too powerful, the framers of the Constitution also included a system of checks and balances. Under this system, each branch of government is able to check or limit the power of the others. Look at the chart of checks and balances on this page, and you can see how this is done. Reading check, explaining. Why did the framers divide the government into three branches? The principle of federalism. Main idea. The Constitution created a federal system of government. Under federalism, power is divided between national and state governments. Civics and you. As you read, think about how the writers of the Constitution divided powers between the federal and state governments. Further limits on government arise from our federal system. Under federalism, as you read in Section 3, power is shared by the national government and the states. Each level of government, national and state, has independent authority over people at the same time. Americans must obey both federal and state laws. Three types of power. In setting up a federal system, the writers of the Constitution divided the powers of government into three types. The powers specifically granted to the national government are called enumerated powers or expressed powers. You will read more about them in Chapter 6. Powers that the Constitution does not give to the national government are kept by the states. These reserved powers, as they are called, include regulating trade within state borders, establishing schools, and making rules for marriage and divorce. In some areas, the authority of the states and the national government overlaps. Powers that both levels of government can exercise are concurrent powers. Examples include the power to collect taxes, borrow money, and set up courts and prisons. The Supremacy Clause. In a federal system, the laws of the state and the laws of the nation may conflict. To deal with this possibility, the framers included the Supremacy Clause. Found in Article 6, the Supremacy Clause states that the Constitution and other laws and treaties made by the national government shall be the supreme law of the land. Because the Constitution is the highest law, the national government is not supposed to act in violation of it. Likewise, states may do nothing that goes against either the Constitution or federal law. Thomas Jefferson admired the Constitution. He wrote, "I am persuaded no Constitution was ever before so well calculated as ours for self-government." Thomas Jefferson's letter to James Madison. The Constitution today. The entire system of federal government in the United States rests on a single document, the Constitution. It has served as the supreme law of the land for more than 200 years. The Constitution is both durable and adaptable. The principles that underpin it, popular sovereignty, the rule of law, separation of powers, checks and balances, and federalism, ensure government restraint as well as power. The Constitution gives our chosen representatives enough power to defend our country's freedom and to keep order. At the same time, it sets limits so that Americans need never fear tyranny. The United States Constitution stands as a powerful symbol of American values and a source of pride and unity. Reading check, explaining. What are reserved powers? The Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States is truly a remarkable document. It was one of the first written constitutions in modern history. The framers wanted to devise a plan for a strong central government that would unify the country as well as preserve the ideals of the Declaration of Independence. The document they wrote created a representative legislature, the office of president, a system of courts, and a process for adding amendments. For over 200 years, the flexibility and strength of the Constitution has guided the nation's political leaders. The document has become a symbol of pride and a force for national unity. The entire text of the Constitution and its amendments follows. For easier study, those passages that have been set aside or changed by the adoption of amendments are printed in blue. Also included are explanatory notes that will help clarify the meaning of each article and section. Preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1. Section 1. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. Section 2. 1. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. 2. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained the age of 25 years, and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. 3. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term of 10 years, in such manner as they shall by law direct. The number of representatives shall not exceed 1 for every 30,000, but each state shall have at least 1 representative, and until such enumeration shall be made, the state of New Hampshire shall be entitled to choose 3, Massachusetts 8, Rhode Island and Providence Plantations 1, Connecticut 5, New York 6, New Jersey 4, Pennsylvania 8, Delaware 1, Maryland 6, Virginia 10, North Carolina 5, South Carolina 5, and Georgia 3. 4. When vacancies happen in the representation from any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. 5. The House of Representatives shall choose their Speaker and other officers, and shall have the sole power of impeachment. Section 3. 1. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have 1 vote. 2. Immediately after they shall be assembled in consequence of the first election, they shall be divided as equally as may be into 3 classes. The seats of the senators of the first class shall be vacated at the expiration of the 2nd year, of the 2nd class at the expiration of the 4th year, and of the 3rd class at the expiration of the 6th year, so that 1/3 may be chosen every 2nd year, and if vacancies happen by resignation or otherwise during the recess of the legislature of any state, the executive thereof may make temporary appointments until the next meeting of the legislature, which shall then fill such vacancies. 3. No person shall be a senator who shall not have attained to the age of 30 years, and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. 4. The Vice President of the United States shall be President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. 5. The Senate shall choose their other officers, and also a President pro tempore. In the absence of the Vice President, or when he shall exercise the office of the President of the United States. 6. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present. 7. Judgment, in cases of impeachment, shall not extend further than to removal from office, and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. Section 4. 1. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the places of choosing senators. 2. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall be on the first Monday in December, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. Section 5. 1. Each House shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day, and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each House may provide. 2. Each House may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of 2/3 expel a member. 3. Each House shall keep a journal of its proceedings, and from time to time publish the same, accepting such parts as may in their judgment require secrecy. And the yeas and nays of the members of either house on any question shall, at the desire of one-fifth of those present, be entered on the journal. 4. Neither house, during the session of Congress, shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that in which the two houses shall be sitting. Section 6. 1. The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services, to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases, except treason, felony, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses, and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. 2. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time. And no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. 8. To promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. 9. To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. 10. To define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. 11. To declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. 12. To raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. 13. To provide and maintain a navy. 14. To make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. 15. To provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. 16. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. 17. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, not exceeding 10 miles square, as may, by secession of particular states, and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. And 18. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States, or in any department or officer thereof. Section 9. 1. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation, not exceeding $10 for each person. 2. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, unless when, in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. 3. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. 4. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. 5. No tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. 6. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. 7. No money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. 8. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office or profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, except of any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Section 10. 1. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. 2. No state shall, without the consent of the Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. And the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports and exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. 3. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships of war in time of peace, enter into any agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power, or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. Article 2. Section 1. 1. The executive power shall be vested in a President of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the Vice President, chosen for the same term, be elected as follows. 2. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors, equal to the whole number of senators and representatives, to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. But no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. 3. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for 2 persons, of whom one at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. And they shall make a list of all the persons voted for, and of the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify, and transmit sealed to the seat of the Government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be President, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if there be more than one who have such majority, and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for President. And if no person have a majority, then from the 5 highest on the list, the said House shall in like manner choose the President. But in choosing the President, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having 1 vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from 2/3 of the states, and a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. In every case, after the choice of the President, the person having the greatest number of votes of the electors shall be the Vice President. But if there should remain 2 or more who have equal votes, the Senate shall choose from them by ballot the Vice President. 4. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. 5. No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of President. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States. 6. In case of the removal of the President from office or of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the Vice President, and the Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability, both of the President and Vice President, declaring what officer shall then act as President, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a President shall be elected. 7. The President shall at stated times receive for his services a compensation, which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them. 8. Before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Section 2. 1. The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the Militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. 2. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur, and he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States, whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the President alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. 3. The President shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate, by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. Section 3. He shall, from time to time, give to the Congress information on the State of the Union, and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and shall commission all the officers of the United States. Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Article 3, Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior, and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation, which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Section 2. 1. The judicial power shall extend to all cases, in law and equity, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made, or which shall be made, under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof, and foreign states, citizens, or subjects. 2. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, and those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all the other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. 3. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury, and such trial shall be held in the state where the said crimes shall have been committed. But when not committed within any state, the trial shall be at such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. Section 3. 1. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act, or on confession in open court. 2. The Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attainted. Article 4, Section 1. Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, and the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved, and the effect thereof. Section 2. 1. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. 2. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up, to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. 3. No person held to service of labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Section 3. 1. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states, or part of states, without the consent of the legislature of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. 2. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion, and on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses of the ninth section of the first article, and that no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Article 6. 1. All debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. 3. The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support the Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Article 7. The ratification of the conventions of nine states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. Done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present, the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord, 1787, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th, in witness whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names. George Washington, President and Deputy from Virginia. New Hampshire, John Langdon, Nicholas Gilman. Massachusetts, Nathaniel Gorman, Rufus King. Connecticut, William Samuel Johnson, Roger Sherman. New York, Alexander Hamilton. New Jersey, William Livingston, David Brearley, William Patterson, Jonathan Dayton. Pennsylvania, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Mifflin, Robert Morris, George Clymer, Thomas Fitzsimmons, Jared Ingersoll, James Wilson, Governor Morris. Delaware, George Reed, Gunning Bedford Jr., John Dickinson, Richard Bassett, Jacob Broom. Maryland, James McHenry, Daniel of St. Thomas Jennifer, Daniel Carroll. Virginia, John Blair, James Madison Jr. North Carolina, William Blount, Richard Dobbs Spate, Hugh Williamson. South Carolina, John Rutledge, Charles Coatsworth Pinckney, Charles Pinckney, Pierce Butler. Georgia, William Few, Abraham Baldwin. Attest, William Jackson, Secretary. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Amendment 11. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity, commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state, or by citizens or subject of any foreign state. Amendment 12. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom, at least, shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president, and they shall make distinct lists of all persons voted for as president, and of all persons voted for as vice president, and of the number of votes for each, which lists they shall sign and certify, and transmit sealed to the seat of the government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the vote shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if no person have such majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding 3 on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from 2/3 of the states, and a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose a president, whenever the right of choice shall devolve upon them, before the 4th day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president, as in the case of the death or other constitutional disability of the president. The person having the greatest number of votes as vice president shall be the vice president, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if no person have a majority, then from the 2 highest numbers on the list, the Senate shall choose the vice president. A quorum for the purpose shall consist of 2/3 of the whole number of senators, and a majority of the whole number shall be necessary to a choice. But no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president of the United States. Amendment 13. Section 1. neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Amendment 14. Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Section 2. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians, not taxed. But when the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for President and Vice President of the United States, representatives in Congress, the executive and judicial officers of a state, or the members of the legislature thereof, is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such state, being 21 years of age, and citizens of the United States, or in any way abridged, except for participation in rebellion or other crime, the basis of representation therein shall be reduced in the proportion which the number of such male citizens shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of President and Vice President, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States, or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each House, remove such disability. Section 4. The validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for service in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or any claim for the loss or emancipation of any slave, but all such debts, obligations, and claims shall be held illegal and void. Section 5. The Congress shall have power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. Amendment 15. Section 1. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Section 2. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Amendment 16. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. Amendment 17. Section 1. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state, elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have 1 vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislatures. Section 2. When vacancies happen in the representation of any state in the Senate, the executive authority of such state shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies, provided that the legislature of any state may empower the executive thereof to make temporary appointments until the people fill the vacancies by election, as the legislature may direct. Section 3. This amendment shall not be so construed as to affect the election or term of any senator chosen before it becomes valid as part of the Constitution. Amendment 18. Section 1. After 1 year from ratification of this article, the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors within, the importation thereof into, or the exportation thereof from the United States, and all territories subject to the jurisdiction thereof, for beverage purposes, is hereby prohibited. Section 2. The Congress and the several states shall have concurrent power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Section 3. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of the several states as provided in the Constitution, within 7 years from the date of the submission hereof to the states by the Congress. Amendment 19. Section 1. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Section 2. Congress shall have power by appropriate legislation to enforce the provisions of this article. Amendment 20. Section 1. The terms of the President and Vice President shall end at noon on the 20th day of January, and the terms of the Senators and Representatives at noon on the 3rd day of January, of the years in which such terms would have ended if this article had not been ratified, and the terms of their successors shall then begin. Section 2. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall begin at noon on the 3rd day of January, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. Section 3. If, at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of the President-elect shall have died, the Vice-President-elect shall become President. If a President shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the President-elect shall have failed to qualify, then the Vice-President-elect shall act as President until a President shall have qualified. And the Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a President-elect nor a Vice-President-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as President, or the manner in which one who is to act shall be selected, and such person shall act accordingly until a President or Vice-President shall have qualified. Section 4. The Congress may by law provide for the case of the death of any of the persons from whom the House of Representatives may choose a President, whenever the right of choice shall have devolved upon them, and for the case of the death of any of the persons from whom the Senate may choose a Vice-President, whenever the right of choice shall have devolved upon them. Section 5. Section 1 and 2 shall take effect on the 15th day of October following the ratification of this article. Section 6. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. Amendment 21. Section 1. The 18th article of amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. Section 2. The transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. Section 3. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by conventions in the several states as provided in the Constitution within 7 years from the date of the submission hereof to the states by the Congress. Amendment 22. Section 1. No person shall be elected to the office of President more than twice, and no person who has held the office of President or acted as President for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected President shall be elected to the office of the President more than once. But this article shall not apply to any person holding the office of President when this article was proposed by the Congress, and shall not prevent any person who may be holding the office of President or acting as President during the term within which this article becomes operative from holding the office of President or acting as President during the remainder of such term. Section 2. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission to the states by the Congress. Amendment 23. Section 1. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint in such manner as the Congress may direct a number of electors of President and Vice President equal to the whole number of Senators and Representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but in no event more than the least populous state. They shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered for the purposes of the election of President and Vice President to be electors appointed by a state, and they shall meet in the district and perform such duties as provided by the 12th article of amendment. Section 2. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Amendment 24. Section 1. The right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for President or Vice President, for electors for President or Vice President, or for Senator or Representative in Congress, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax. Section 2. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Amendment 25. Section 1. In case of the removal of the President from office or his death or resignation, the Vice President shall become President. Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the President shall nominate a Vice President who shall take the office upon confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. Section 3. Whenever the President transmits to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits to them a written declaration to the contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the Vice President as acting President. Section 4. Whenever the Vice President and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the Vice President shall immediately assume the power and duties of the office of acting President. Thereafter, when the President transmits to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office, unless the Vice President and the majority of either the principal officers of the Executive Department or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit within 4 days to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose, if not in session. If the Congress within 21 days after receipt of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by 2/3 vote of both houses that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the Vice President shall continue to discharge the same as acting President. Otherwise, the President shall resume the power and duties of his office. Amendment 26. Section 1. The right of citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of age. Section 2. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Amendment 27. No law varying the compensation for the services of senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened.